This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
Good morning, Cascadia. Today is Thursday, January 17th, 2013, and you're listening to KBOO Portland, your community radio at 90.7 FM, kboo.fm on the web. Once again today, Gabir Abbas is going to join us. The lead attorney with the Council on American Islamic Relations is here to talk with us about the architecture of entrapment and the Muslim community. This, of course, in regard to the Mohammed trial is ongoing. It has been literally made a mockery of. It's been turned into a cheap sideshow by newspapers of record. And Amber Energy, the coal giant, has been joining forces with Peabody Exploration, have launched a full court assault on the West Coast. Everybody heads up and beware, because even as we sleep, the fix is in. Also, if we can have a state bank, a state investment corporation, why not a state bank? Time to ask the Gov a few pointed questions. First, the weather from around Cascadia. For today, mostly sunny with a high near 40 and a light northeast breeze. Tonight, patchy freezing fog later, lows around 29. And for tomorrow, more fog starting out in the morning, otherwise mostly sunny with a high near 45. And for tomorrow, Friday night, patchy freezing fog and a low around 31. The alternative weather outlook, it is a waxing crescent leaf moon in Pisces. The moon is 5 days old. Synodic outlook of all three, synodic, biodynamic, and the sidereal. As we mentioned yesterday, basically we're in a holding pattern, and that in any case would obtain since we are in that point in winter where it seems that the earth is holding its breath. So let's get right into the news from around Cascadia, having addressed the weather, both conventional and alternative. Before we hit some of the high points around Cascadia, however, in fact, this interview with Ibrahim Hooper is definitely part of our shared story now. Good morning. We're very, very happy to welcome Ibrahim Hooper to the KBOO Airwaves. As many people know, Mr. Hooper is the Executive Director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He has been a guest on Air Cascadia in the past, and today we call on him to offer insight into a trial that has literally transfixed the region and indeed the nation at a very strange time in American history, when we are a little confused as to what it means to be a whistleblower and what it means to leak information and whether who holds the moral responsibility when a drone being operated by a pimply-faced teenager under a bunker in Nevada takes out a whole Afghan village. So there are moral questions here. And they are drawn in stark reality now in Portland by the trial of a young Somali man who quite clearly was not so much led as pushed into an unwelcome role as our terrorist poster child. Good morning, Ibrahim. Thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
We have. I don't know if you have read any of the local coverage, but our local paper of record has turned it all into some kind of ghastly a reality show. The way it's being reported is nothing short of just garish melodrama. But this is not an uncommon situation. It's probable that the FBI has many other people who are groomed and prepared to be deployed in this way as yet another element in their arsenal in their eternal war on terror. How does this affect the Muslim community and families, in particular the people who are targeted, as Mohammed Mahmoud has been?
Well, in all these cases, we're always concerned about the process of how they come about. And typically we see that some individual, usually some type of vulnerable individual, whether it's economically vulnerable, family situation, as in this case, age, mental condition, is overheard or somehow comes on the radar of the FBI, and then they're assigned these informant/agent provocateurs who then spend, usually it's about a year, grooming the person until they can announce some big arrest and foiling of their own plot, basically. So it's of great concern to those who believe, as many civil libertarians believe, and Muslims believe, that there would not have been any plot to begin with if not for the FBI's intervention in this person's life.
It seems, too, that it was in fact, all their plot right from the get-go, and that Mahmoud was at a stage in his life, and of course they recently immigrated to the United States and into a life that is greatly reduced in means from that which they had been living in Somalia. You know, the promise of all this opportunity in America, and then they find themselves, family members, his dad in particular, stymied at every moment.
What I particularly found troubling was that the FBI agent provocateurs even told him what to say in this so-called martyrdom video. It's truly bizarre.
But that was the question I wanted to ask you. So-called martyrdom video. Martyr videos are very common, and this is kind of standard practice. Where he never planned to martyr himself. He was told that the bomb would go off, and somehow he was going to then escape to Yemen, which is so utterly beyond the realm of possibility. It's ridiculous, but. It was a goodbye video, which people don't make. They make martyr videos, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it just goes to the fact that this individual seemed to be extremely vulnerable. We've seen other cases where people who are, have very diminished mental capacities being roped into these things. We saw one case where one individual was promised a liver transplant for his dying brother. I mean, come on. I mean, it's you could maybe entice anybody in these kinds of situations.
Well, exactly. And you're reading from some of the transcripts from this trial. There is apparently... In cross-examination, I guess, Mohammed told, it was revealed that Mohammed told one of these two, their names were Hussein and Yusuf, that After they let him blow something up, then they asked him, how do you feel? He said he felt good, Allah, what, well. And one of the things that Muhammad told these guys was, this is just the motivation for me. And I thought, of all of the quotes, that is perhaps the most telling. They knew exactly which buttons to push. So they've had a lot of experience doing this. How long have the feds been targeting vulnerable people and learning and practicing?
This is, for the Muslim community, this is a post 9/11 phenomenon. I don't know how long this tactic has been used on other communities, but Muslims have been experiencing it, obviously, since the 9/11 terror attacks. And, of course, we always have to preface all of these things that we say with that we believe that if there were actually plots out there from individuals who are really thinking of carrying something out based on their own initiative, of course we all want these kinds of things stopped and foiled. I mean, American Muslims live here. We're citizens. Our families are here. Everybody wants our nation to be safe and secure, but we just don't believe that seeking out these vulnerable people and then coercing them or leading them into these kinds of FBI plots is a productive use of law enforcement resources. There may be actual plotters out there, but these don't seem to be those individuals.
It accomplishes nothing except, in this case, of course, they were trying to sell the public on a new, very invasive TSA screening technique at that particular Christmas season. So he served a useful purpose in that they could say, they could point to the incident and say, see, you know, we do need to be, you know, watchful. Ibrahim, thank you so much for that.
Sure.
Reading through the reports from our newspaper of record, it's just astonishing how very, the word vulnerable has been overused here, but let's try entrapment instead. It's so patently obvious. It's a case of entrapment. It almost, it seems ludicrous to go through the motions. Thank you so much. My guest has been Ibrahim Hope. He's the executive director of the Council on American Islamic Relations. He's been a guest on Air Cascadia in the past, and we are so pleased to welcome him back. Thanks again for that. We're going to turn now to another troubling aspect, and again, this is a product of our so-called eternal war on terror. The issue of Thomas Drake was in headlines a while back. It actually should remain in headlines, especially as we witness sort of martyring of John Kiriakou, who is alleged to have leaked government secrets, which in fact were not government secrets at all. And in any case, he should have been protected by whistleblower laws, which were loudly touted, but upon closer observation, seemed to be utterly ridiculous and spineless and mainly a PR stunt. Perhaps even more than Thomas Drake, and part of the Thomas Drake story. Diane Rourke herself was part of overstepping of the boundaries on the part of the feds. Diane has been on the show before when we've talked about whistleblowing, and now with this piece by Thomas Drake, which appeared in Politico on the 14th, I'm very pleased to welcome Diane back to the program to take a look at this and to revisit the whistleblower role that Drake played. And in the light of the question, when is it a leak and when is it whistleblowing? And when are we? And do we have any protections anywhere, really? Good morning, Diane. Thanks for being with us.
Good morning.
Well, this, you know, Obama signed the Whistleblower Protection Enhancement Act on November 27th to great, you know, mass hurrahs around the country. And immediately after that, then we have John Kiriakou is going to prison, we see. From your experience, and harsh experience, I should add, whistleblowing, what kind of protections have you seen? Are we to really take this seriously? And the second question is, when people leak information, is that whistleblowing? How does the government, in your experience, and you're an insider, I want listeners to know, Diane Rourke is very much an insider here. When is it okay for the government employees to reveal information? When is that a so-called legitimate leak, as in legitimate rape, and a prohibited leak?
Well, I guess you have to define leak first. Usually, leak refers to classified information, but a lot of times the people are just revealing embarrassing information, and that's what Tom Drake did. Tom revealed in a series of articles in the Baltimore Sun that there were a lot of things that were wrong at NSA, that they were wasting a lot of money. There was a lot of incompetence, especially on the technical side. And they were very embarrassing articles, and the government went after him. And then they claimed that it was a leak. They claimed, they indicted him under 5 counts of the Espionage Act, and they claimed that there were 5 different pieces of paper that they found in his home that were classified. But what they did to try to get him was they retroactively classified them. They were not actually classified when he took the papers. And so what they did was they framed him. And they pretty much did the same thing to me. I had talked to the same reporter that Tom talked to and given her my objections to the warrantless wiretaps, which I had gone around to a lot of people within the administration.